Well, Michelle Ford was Australia's youngest swimmer to qualify for the Montreal 1976 Olympic Games. She was 13 years of age and was Australia's only individual gold medalist at the Moscow 1980 Olympics. She was inducted into the Sport Australia Hall of Fame back in 1985, was a founding member of the IOC Athletes Commission and held directorship positions with the Australian Sports Commission, the Australian Sports Foundation and Swimming Australia as well. And she's written a book, Turning the Tide, and gives a glimpse into the challenges faced by athletes striving for excellence amidst, well, great political turmoil and also bureaucratic hurdles as well. Great to have her on, Michelle Ford. Michelle, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, Jared. Good, thanks.
13 years of age when you went to Montreal in 1976, Michelle. How did you receive the news for a young girl at that age? Tell us about the feeling in the build-up to that Olympics.
Oh, look, it was just amazing. I'd had a great winning streak at 12, 13. Look, I've got to say that when I was in my younger years, I didn't really touch the wall first. I came seconds, thirds, fourths, you know, like it wasn't success at the first race I did. But by 12 years of age, I was showing promise. And I broke the Commonwealth records and, you know, my times were up there, world standards. And I just knew I was going to get on that team. But there was some trepidation about my age, of course, taking someone so young. But I didn't see it like that. That was, you know, I felt that, you know, I'd done the time. So, I was there and I was there to win gold.
And so what did you take out of 76 as a young girl heading towards 1980 and those games in Moscow, and how much improvement did you have during that period to give you the confidence to compete against, well, the challenges, I guess, in and out of the pool that you were facing against?
Yeah, well, we were struck. Montreal was a real tough time for Australian athletes. Firstly, there was no money in the sport at all, and we were sent to the other side of Australia for a training camp, away from our parents, away from our coaches, away from our friends. I was 13. I had no idea of how to live on my own even, and no one to talk to. And it was very devastating. And that was the same for most of my teammates. But hitting Montreal was a whole different ballgame. And we arrived on the pool deck for, of course, our first session, and there we saw the East German girls, or should I say, East Germans. And it was quite a fright because of the size of the girls, the you know, the strength, just the, even how they managed the team. It was professional, you know, and we were just a scraggly lot of Australian kids, really.
Tell us about the 1980 Olympic Games and the lead up to it. And, you know, you were told to boycott, you received death threats. What was it like in the build up? What was it like competing over there? And in particular, when you first came face to face with the East Germans, what were you thinking to yourself?
Yeah, look, I think the build-up to the 1980 Games was tough on everyone. The Americans called the boycott and asked all Western countries and to join. We were just sacrificial lambs, really, in the process. And, you know, the athletes who were training, we had our hearts set on going. And the Australian Olympic Committee, we were fortunate that they decided to go to the Games. You know, a lot of athletes pulled off. I mean, training was just impossible. You know, when you don't know whether it's going to... It was a bit like the COVID, you know. We didn't know whether we were going, we were not, we were going. So you're in and out of the water wondering, you know, what's going to happen. And there was a lot of trouble in the Australian public whether we should go or not. There was opinion polls. We received death threats. I mean, it was a horrible time. And by the time we got to Moscow, you know, we had to forget all that, but it was hard to forget because we were so far away, yet we still kept getting fan mail that said we were traitors to the country, which is really hard to stand up on the blocks. But the other thing, when we hit Moscow, of course, were our competitors, and that being the East German girls, and they were strongest. You know, if you look at their, and this is what I've presented in the book, is the side of the story that no one yet has presented, and that is about the East German girls and how much they were fed doping at a very young age. And their doping amounts, you know, if we recall Ben Johnson, they were taking three times the amounts of what Ben Johnson was taking. And they were my competitors.
Wow. And yet, in spite of all that, in 1980 in Moscow, you win the 800 metres freestyle gold medal. What are your memories of the race?
It was a strange race because the first two races I had my 200 butterfly where I got third and my 400 freestyle where I got fourth. Both races taught me that these girls were a team. They worked as a team. They sent one girl out first, one girl back. And so with my coach, Bill Swinton, we decided that we were going to outsmart them. And, you know, I asked Bill how I managed, and he said, no one would have beaten you that day, Michelle, no one. Mm-hmm. But, I was surprised to get out in front of them, and that I kept saying, you know, they're coming back at me, knowing their speed and their endurance through the doping program. When I touched that wall, it was total relief.
It's a special achievement, isn't it? Because you're the only non-Soviet bloc female swimmer to win individual medals in two specialised strokes. So when you touched the wall and to know that you'd beaten those girls and you were clean, you must have been on cloud nine.
Yeah, look, I guess that has all come to me writing this book as well, is the realization of what I actually achieved. And that is, you know, I overcame the doping, the biggest state sponsored doping the world has ever seen. And I showed that you could get up there and win without. And I hope, you know, that's part of my story. You know, I want the parents and the coaches and people who are around athletes to realize that that's not the pathway that you should have take for young kids.
No, and you were one of the I shouldn't say lucky ones, but you were one of the competitors that won and beat the girls who were doping. But what about some of the other competitors from Australia or maybe around the world? Have you ever spoken to them about how they felt after those Olympics? Because, you know, they would have finished on the podium, possibly won a gold medal, but they were denied the opportunity?
Absolutely. And I wanted to write this book to use my voice as an advocate for all those athletes who were denied those opportunities due to doping and to boycotts. Doping, of course, because the recognition of those girls has never been done through the IOC nor the FINA, which is the international body for swimming. And I think that because of the facts that we know today, and this has only come out in just before 2000, that the girls took their administrators and their coaches to court in Germany. And by doing that, the German courts sanctioned the coaches for the doping program. Yet the girls who competed against them have never had any recognition or put to bed that question mark over why, if you cheat, you cheat. Okay, we understand there is a lot of empathy for the East German girls and what they went through, but there is a question about fair play, and that's the only question I think that has to be answered.
We're speaking with Michelle Ford, Olympic 800 metres freestyle gold medalist at the Moscow Games in 1980. And Michelle, you became a founding member as well of the IOC Athletes Commission. Tell us about that experience, getting invited onto that commission by the IOC president, Juan Antonio Semeranch, at the time?
Yeah, look, I mean, with all that turmoil and trouble that the athlete went through, the Olympic movement itself, the International Olympic Movement, was on its knees. It didn't know where to turn to survive the hit on the head that they had through that 1980 ordeal. And because they invited 25 athletes from around the world, and I was lucky enough to be one of those, and we said to the IOC, I mean, athletes didn't have a voice. We were treated as political pawns and seen as, you know, unthinking robots, really, was their actual words that they used. You know, we were supposed to be on the field of play, not in the boardrooms, not on the, not discussing any issues with them. So when we came out and we were quite strong and bold in our ask for that, we said that doping is the most shameful abuse. We still believe that, but also that we need to put the sanctions around the entourage and give a lifetime ban to athletes. Now, that was a bold statement from athletes at that time, but it was enough to move the IOC into getting to the WADA, the World Anti-Doping Drug Authority, and also gender equality. There was no females in the administration of sport. We asked that be changed. And also, of course, that the political interference not be a deterrent for athletes.
Mm. Michelle, I've got to ask, and I do know the answer to this, but what do you make of this new concept that's been floating about in regards to the performance-enhancing games?
Look, I think we have a duty of care to our younger generation, all those athletes who have performed at the highest level, should be making sure that there's fair play, and doping is not fair play, and doping is dangerous. Doping is very dangerous. We know through my book, I've brought out what happens to you if you take drugs. The East German girls is that example. We have a real trouble. They're dying off at not 40 years of age. They've got problems with their reproductive systems. Their internal system is a mess. Now, if we want that for the younger generation, the enhanced games sort of points to that. Well, it's all good. Go for it. And I just think it's a tragedy for anyone who goes in that and, you know, applauds that.
It's fair to say, Michelle, our current swim team, it's a powerhouse once again as we head towards Paris this year with huge expectations. Who do you like watching compete, and how do you think our current team will go as we head towards those games?
Well, it's just too exciting to see the women's team, and I'm just so, you know, the Australian women have always held our flag up high over the years, and especially in swimming. And you know, we've got Kate Campbell coming back, and you know, good luck to her, and Mickey and Emma. You know, she's there, but we've got a lot of younger ones, and Ariane in my event, the 800 freestyle. Mm. You know, if she can win gold, you know, that would just take our history even further into the record books.
Your book, Turning the Tide, and of course, Michelle, it's the sort of book, you don't have to be a sports or a swimming fan. This is very much a story that would have broad appeal.
Yeah, I hope to have reached, you know, the mums and dads out there, and, you know, just a general interest, a human interest story. That happened actually, sadly, in the Cold War when that was playing out. But those events are really back on our table today.
Great stuff, and naturally easily bought online and in bookstores, I'm sure. Turning the Tide is the title. Michelle Ford's story. And Michelle, we really appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks, Jared. Thanks, Laurie, for having me on.